Stories from California Cattle Country is produced by the California Cattlemen's Foundation and receives support from the California Cattle Council. We've created this podcast for those wanting to connect with the people and practices of far-flung ranches and dairies in California through hearing stories from and learning more about the families of cattle country. This is from Wikipedia. In the early morning hours of Sunday, August 16th through Monday, August 17th, a series of highly unusual thunderstorms rolled through most of Northern California, which came from the moisture of the diminishing tropical storm Fausto. With these thunderstorms came a reported 10,849 lightning strikes that, within a 72-hour period, sparked 376 known fires across much of the state. The LNU Lightning Complex fires were a large complex of wildfires that burned during the 2020 California wildfire season across much of the wine country area of Northern California, Lake, Napa, Sonoma, Solano, and Yolo counties, from August 17th to October 2nd, 2020. The complex was composed of numerous lightning-sparked fires, most of which were small. While they ignited separately from each other, the Hennessy fire eventually grew to merge with the Gamble, Green, Markley, Spanish, and Morgan fires, scorching 192,000 acres by itself, or a total burn area of 363,000 acres in the complex. The fire, which burned in the hills surrounding several large cities such as Fairfield, Napa, and Vacaville, destroyed 1,491 structures and damaged a further 232. In all, six people were killed and another five injured. The LNU Lightning Complex fire is the sixth largest wildfire in the recorded history of California. What's strange is that the ranch we're visiting today exists in a place with comparatively high amount of precipitation while also being in a populated area. In this episode, we talked to Mike Furlong about his ranching operation in Bodega Bay, his family's experience with the fire, and what could be done, if anything, to mitigate them. We also talk about predators in the area, which kind of serves as a preview to a subject area that we'll be addressing in a few months. I'm Ryan Donahue, and this is Stories from California Cattle Country.
I'm Mike Furlong, I'm president of Sonoma Marin Cattlemen. We run beef cattle on the coast here, Northern California, Bodega Bay area.
It's hard to explain. Again, it's an audio recording. It's a podcast, so it's hard to, you know, we'll have some pictures attached to it. If I look to my right now and you look to your left, like, what are we looking at there?
Well, we're looking out at the ocean view I get to see every day. It's beautiful out here. Green pastures and ocean.
Is it ever lost on you? I mean, do you get used to it?
Yeah, I think you get used to the fact. I mean, I know some people have never seen the ocean in their life, and I get to see it every day almost. So it's, you don't even really think it's there, but till those stormy days when it's blowing and nasty and miserable out here, but it's pretty neat.
As I understand, you're fifth generation, and you've been, a whole bunch of generations have been here.
Yep. And I don't have the dates exactly.
No,
but back in the mid-1860s, there was three brothers came over from Ireland and settled in this area. We're lucky enough to actually lease one of the ranches that they settled on and run cattle on it now. We've had it for, I think, the last 10 years. My uncle had it for 15 before that. And then we leased two or three ranches that neighbor it. And I actually started working for a ranch that neighbors it. So my great-grandfather was born on that, on one of the ranches that is right next to where I work. And my great-grandmother was born on another ranch right here where I work. So it's kind of like home to me now.
You kind of just alluded to it a little bit, but there's like obviously some benefits to operating in this environment. I mean, A, it's beautiful. There seems to be plenty of water and green grass, at least right now. Are there any downside to being out this way?
Not a lot. I mean, yeah, when you go to shipping time, the trucking freight kills us. The coastal, I mean, the buyers don't like the coastal calves. So, you know, I mean, the calves come off of here really in good shape. And I think that kind of holds us back. And the weather is so moderate. You know, you have 65 degree weather year round on the coast, and calf goes to 100 degree weather. And that's not great, a great situation to be in. So that's probably one of our biggest problems. I mean, the cattle do great out here and come off of this country great, and everybody likes them. But when they go to the Midwest or something, it's not, you know, it's a long ride and it's pretty tough on them. So
what we're talking about specifically in this series is about fire. And you've kind of had some right now, you know, in the last 5 years, there's been some pretty massive fires in the area. And it looks like you've kind of, I'm not saying been lucky, but like you've, you know, kind of weathered them.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you're right. We've been extremely lucky. We only lost a small portion of one ranch, and it was pretty minimal. It could have been worse, but from what we've seen and helping neighbors that lost their whole ranch, you know, it's been, it was pretty good. But it's, you know, it's a fear that's always there every summer. It's like, well, here we go. What's going to happen this summer? You know, it's been, yeah, I can't even, they've all kind of run together, like every fire. So I don't know. We've had fires on both sides of us, to the east of us mainly, but the Myers fire, you know, it did, like I said, it got a little bit of our ground and it burned right to the ocean. So that was kind of hard to believe, but this country has been taken over by brush in the last 40 years from the lack of grazing. And there's so much parkland now that doesn't graze, that gets just turned into coyote brush. It's, you know, creating these volatile fires when they get going, where in the old days it was grazed and there wasn't anything for it to burn. You know, it was pasture land. So it's really changed how you think about things.
Yeah, when we went up the hill, I noticed, like you were talking about the growth there, and you were also saying that I think, and some of your families were involved with sheep in the area. If you were to say, have to fix one of those areas that have been overgrown, like what's the process? Is there a way to do it? Or like you said, you have neighbors that mow. Is there a grazing process that would take care of it?
I think it'd be tough. I mean, I think you'd have to put goats on it or something to get it down, or mow it and then graze it with goats. But the predators are so bad in this area that you can't keep them alive. Farther south of here where it's open grasslands, you can use livestock, guardian dogs and stuff like that. But up here, it's, you know, there's so much timber, and you'd have to have way too many dogs for the amount of livestock that you have to make it feasible.
Would you say that the growth actually has contributed to that problem? Is that there's places for them to kind of hide and the predators to mill around, or is it just that there's more of them now?
I think it's just that there's more of them now. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing that can control them now, really. There's no means to protect your herds anymore. So other than guardian dogs, and like I said, it's not feasible in this area. So I think they've just kind of, the population of predators has gone out of control.
When there was fire going here, I know that you said that your father didn't have access to coming down this way. Did you have any access problems getting to your animals?
Yeah, we did. I kind of mobilized a couple cousins. We loaded fire hoses and water tanks and tried to get up. Well, the first night, actually, we evacuated cattle. But then the second day, we came back trying to, you know, see what was going on and what we could do to help stop it. And there was some access problems. We finally got through to a guy that let us in. We had to get in to feed. And so he finally did let us go. But yeah, the access, we saw that in another fire. Friends of ours over in Knights Valley by Calistoga had, you know, lost their place, and we were trying to get in there to help them. And the access was horrible. We finally figured out a way to get around it where the roadblock wasn't, you know, there was a Caltrans guy there that let us through, and that otherwise, if you came in the other way, you couldn't get through. And no matter what you said, and there was no active fire even going at that point. We were just trying to get through to bring supplies in so they could, you know, rebuild their corrals and rebuild fences and keep their cattle off the highway and feed them. And it was kind of an interesting thing with the access.
We're just going to kind of change direction a little bit, because there's one thing I wanted to talk about was the your participation in the Range to Table program.
Yeah.
And what is it, and why do you participate?
It was a program started, I think, by the Redwood Empire Food Bank, and Cheryl and Frank were instrumental in getting it off the ground. And actually, Cheryl and Frank took us to a Redwood Empire Food Bank dinner. They had a 7-minute video clip at this dinner, or it wasn't a video, it was just a audio clip of people that had fallen on hard times. You know, it really kind of hits your heart. People get a bad rap sometimes, the homeless people that, you know, they're don't want to work or whatever. And it's not always the case. They had people were one paycheck away and something happened to their husband and he passed away and he was the sole breadwinner and they were didn't have any food. So, you know, they could go to the food bank and get some. And this program of getting protein, the food bank started with Cheryl, what we thought was a pretty good deal, you know. And so we've donated some beef to it over the years and to try to help out where you can.
What are the mechanics of it? I mean, you're not donating whole animals or anything. Is it just like, you know, the ground beef or is it, or how does it work?
Yeah, no, you can donate a whole animal. You take it into, well, now it's a little more difficult. I think the slaughterhouse that was here doesn't do it anymore. So you got to ship them off to up north. Or actually, there's a mobile slaughterhouse that you can take them to now. You can take them in there and then just tell them you want it to go to Redwood Empire Food Bank. And they actually, I think now, originally when that started out, they were, you know, they'd do it like all the different cuts. Now I think they just make hamburger to make it so that one person doesn't go in and get a prime rib and the next person gets a, you know, a bag of stew. So now everybody gets hamburger and that way it's a little more fair.
Over the last 5 years, you know, fires have become so prevalent in the area. How is fire insurance? Is it more expensive or unattainable or I don't know.
Yeah, we're really lucky on our property, the house we have, we didn't lose it. But I know numerous people in this area. One of our landlords up the coast just north of here, they lost theirs. And my grandfather lost his, you know, fire insurance. And I think if you can get on with California now, there's some program they have, but it's really expensive.
Okay, I got two more. This is a curveball, so I apologize. But I was in Bodega. Right now we're in Bodega Bay. I went to film school, like I mentioned. So like I love movies and anytime I can steal some sound bites from movies, I'll do it. And The Birds was obviously filmed in Bodega. And then when I was reading about it, there's your cousin, Jeff Furlong, had a comment about birds actually being problematic in the area in regard to sheep.
Yeah.
Is that something that you care to share or no?
Yeah. I mean,
I think it's a crazy story.
It was a big problem when growing up, when I was young. I mean, eagles were really bad on lambs. They would kill baby lambs all the time. I mean, that was a huge problem.
What about that? What about the ravens?
Ravens will too. Yeah. I don't think we saw as much raven depredation, but definitely the eagles.
I mean, because, yeah, and this is, I actually got the story from Lauren at Stemple Creek too. They were calving or whatever. Is it called calving with lambs?
And oh, no, lambing.
Lambing. They're lambing, and the ravens will go down and just eat the lamb's eyeballs.
Yeah, yeah. No, they will. Wild boars would actually kill lambs too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they would. You could get a boar that was really bad, and I mean, kill a lamb every night. You know,
I see them everywhere too.
Yeah, they're not so much here anymore. They kind of got wiped out, but it was interesting.
Okay, so the last question, and this is like an overarching thing we talk about with everybody that we talk to, is about legacy. As far as ranchers go, you're a younger rancher than I'm used to interviewing. Like I said, you know, a lot of them are kind of long in the tooth. Right now we have your twins standing right over there and your wife, and they're being very, very quiet. How important is it for you to preserve this operation in case it looks like they were opening gates for us and stuff? So I think, you know, it seems like they're into it. But how important is it to you to preserve this for them?
It's very important, I think. My great-great-grandfather did it. And I mean, they were in the dairy. And my great-grandfather was a dairyman. And then my grandfather turned to sheep. My dad had sheep and then went to cattle. And my grandfather had cattle, too, after predators got out of control in this area. My dad told me to go to college and do something different, you know, but I couldn't get it out of my blood. So, and my daughter's the same way. She's really into the cattle. She has just a small herd of her own now. And Cole has a couple too, but he's not so much into the ranch as he's going to be a baseball player, I think. So
I think, yeah,
it's very important, I think, to keep on our legacy going on in this area. I mean, not a lot of people can say the kids are the sixth generation, you know?
And the other thing is I noticed that, you know, a lot of the people I interview, like, have the same kind of feelings. And then I ask them, like, well, the idea of being able to bounce around professionally is easy for me. Like, that's what my dad did, had a bunch of jobs and things like that. But in this, it's a commitment. And I always wondered if it was my family, you know, I wonder if they would just be like, oh no, you're doing this. Like, you're just like forcing it. But then it seems that most are like, go do what you want and then see if you want to come back is kind of the thing. It's a very unique profession.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. And no, I'm just proud that they're, I mean, no, I'm not saying Cole doesn't like it. I think he likes it too. He comes and works with us, but you know, Caitlin will be there every day helping me if I need it. So it's makes you feel good that your kids are interested in it and want to do it.
I want to thank you for letting me into your world for a few minutes, and thank you for your time, and hopefully this sounds good.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was interesting.
Now, as always, for any feedback, I could be reached via email at ryan@cowcattle.org. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.